Hi, welcome to Colonial Williamsburg, past and present. The stuff is new and you won't hear it anyplace else. What we want to do at first is get you behind the scenes and let you meet the people who work here. That's my job. I'm Lloyd Dobbins and mostly I ask questions. This time I'm asking Elaine Shirley, who is with the Coach and Livestock Department and is described to me as a livestock husbander. What does a livestock husbander do?
Well, a livestock husbander takes care of livestock. The term husbandry means the care of or the feeding of. So I take care of the livestock. Sheep, cattle, and poultry, certainly in the 18th century, that term would have included horses and pigs. We have a whole group who work with me who take care of the horses because that's a very specialized area. And we actually don't have pigs, partly because in the 18th century, they weren't allowed in the city limits of Williamsburg.
Oh, that's snobbish.
Well, no, it's not snobbish at all. Pigs can be quite messy, and there are good reasons that there are rules against having them in the city limits.
I saw some pigs in China, and the guy was inordinately proud of them because they kept their pens so nice and neat. Now you're telling me, nah, not so, huh?
Well, it depends on the husbandry that you take, taking care of them.
Yeah. You were moving something this morning that I never quite got to.
Right. A big part of my job is making sure the animals have enough to eat, and part of that involves moving them around. And
so
the reason I was a little late was we were moving rams, which are adult males, and we pull up our modern trailer, and they know that there's food on the trailer. So most of the time, everybody jumps on the trailer, and then we can take them where we want to go. And they were very cooperative. Mm-hmm. It just happened to be at the wrong time for the interview.
You've got these animals. They have to be like the 18th century. I mean, you would have seen them in the 18th century doing what they are doing now. Can people pet them or, you know, go up to them, or would you?
Well, it's probably best not to pet them because in actuality, they're not pets. They're working animals. So we tell folks to enjoy them and we're happy to talk to them about them, but it's generally best not to pet them.
I was just thinking if you were moving rams around, that would be a bad idea.
Right, right. And that's one reason we kind of discourage petting is that some of the male animals in particular can be mean and they can hurt you. So it's always best to give them their distance.
Did you say fowl? Did you take care of chickens and things?
We do. We have chickens and pigeons currently. In the 18th century, we would have seen turkeys and geese, ducks, and doves as well. But at the moment, we have chickens and pigeons.
Were doves eaten?
Yes, yes. Doves and pigeons are delicious, actually.
Sorry you told me that.
They're called squab. Mm-hmm. And that's a young pigeon or a young dove.
People in the 18th century, that was a regular sort of event?
Well, you have some wild birds. Obviously, the passenger pigeon was still here in the 18th century. And so you certainly could have either shot those birds or if you knew where the nests were, the ideal thing is to capture the young just before they learn to fly because they're very, very tender at that point. But we do know that people also kept captive pigeons and doves just like, you know, we keep sheep and chickens and turkeys. They had their own houses. They would live in the houses. They produce offspring. We eat the offspring. They come home. The kids are gone. They say, oh, okay, we'll lay some more eggs. And they produce more offspring. They're actually extremely efficient. And pigeons are kind of neat because they're equal opportunity parents. The males sit on the eggs half the time. The females sit on the eggs half the time. And pigeons feed their young with something called pigeon milk. It's a secretion they make in their throat. And again, the males feed the young, as do the females.
You've ruined my whole idea of pigeons.
I know. An awful lot of people think of pigeons as awful, awful birds. And once you really start getting into them, they're fascinating. One of the neatest things you can do is go to a poultry show. Or even just a pigeon show, you would be amazed at the colors and the sizes and the feather patterns. There are pigeons that are as big as chickens called Romans, and then there are little tiny pigeons called Figuritas. There are pigeons that have big whorls of feathers on their necks called Jacobeans. It's just fascinating.
Pigeon, you say pigeon to me, I think of a dirty thing on the street in New York.
Well, exactly. And you probably didn't realize that those birds were actually brought here from overseas. They are not native to this country. They were brought over and have adapted very well. And partly they took over where the passenger pigeon died out.
Now, that memory tells me that's an extinct bird.
Yes, the passenger pigeon died out the beginning of the 20th century.
Really?
Yes, but in the 18th century, they would have been here and you know, taking a niche in the ecosystem.
Mm-hmm. What's the most fun animal to work with? The one that will kind of do what you want without being hit with a stick?
None of them do what you want all the time. I don't know that I can say that I have a favorite animal. The lambs are a tremendous amount of fun, and we have just finished the big portion of our lambing. We have 23 lambs this year. They're a tremendous amount of fun because they have a lot of energy and they jump around. And quite often when you pick them up, they just kind of lean against you and sort of half fall asleep. So I guess maybe they're the most fun.
They would be the size that I would be attracted to. I mean, you know,
yeah.
Horses are too big for me and cows are too big for me.
Yeah. Yeah, although the cattle that we have are really wonderful animals, and we have two calves currently. We have a couple more calves coming probably between now and July, and we milk those cows. And it's kind of nice, particularly on a cold morning, to snuggle up to a nice warm cow.
Something I've never had a desire to do.
Oh, well.
Cow snuggling.
You should try it.
Maybe I should. But, you milk the cows.
Mm-hmm.
What time do you have to get up for that? Isn't that an early event?
Well, you're right. If there are a lot of factors in milking a cow, and if you take the calf away from the cow, then you do want to milk her on a real regular basis because you want her to keep producing milk. And milk is produced hormonally. So if you don't milk her, her hormones will say, oh, nobody's taking the milk. Maybe we should drop back in production. But the way we work it here is a little different. We typically leave the calf with the cow, and we'll shut the calf up first thing in the morning, 8 or 9 o'clock, and the calf will be in a little pen where it can see its mom and hear its mom, but it can't nurse. And then about 3 or 4 in the afternoon, the cow will have built up enough milk that we sit down with a bucket and we interpret to the visitors and milk the cow for the public. And then we let the calf out. So the calf essentially gets 2/3 of the milk the cow makes from about 4 till 8 the next morning, and we get 1/3 of the milk.
Mm-hmm. What do people ask?
Well, people ask a lot of interesting questions. Probably one of the most common questions is, what is its name?
Yeah.
How old is it? The livestock we use here, the cattle in particular, are real different than folks are used to seeing. And so we get a lot of questions, again, with the cattle in particular, is that a bull? Mm. Because we leave the horns on our cattle. And most folks don't realize that males and females both produce horns. There are a few breeds of cattle that are naturally polled, and that term means they never grow horns. But a female can have horns as well as a male. So people see these big animals out in the field with horns, and they say, oh, that must be a bull. But you have to look at the other end of the animal to tell if it's a girl or a boy.
You have a lot of rare breeds, right? I mean,
we
breeds
do.
You won't see every place.
You're right. Our cattle are rare. They're called American Milking Devons, originally from England. They came into this country about 1623, so they've been here in the United States for a long, long time. And they were real popular because they're a triple-purpose animal. The average farmer in the 18th century did a little bit of everything. And that way, if maybe the cow didn't get pregnant and didn't produce a calf and didn't produce milk, then the orchard did well. Or if you had a fox that killed all the chickens, then maybe the tobacco did well. So he wasn't putting all his proverbial eggs in one basket. So he needed cattle that he could milk, he could work, because cattle pulling plows and pulling stumps out of the ground and pulling logs through the woods is how we get farm work done in the 18th century. Mm-hmm. And you also need cattle that produce enough meat that you can eat them. So the milking Devon was quite popular. Now, today's farmers are very different. We have dairy farmers, and they're very interested in milk production, but not interested in meat production, really. And we have beef farmers who are just the opposite. Mm-hmm. And so animals like the Devon that fit both venues fairly well are not real popular. And that's one of the reasons we have them, because we want folks to see the correct kind of livestock for the time period. And we also want folks to realize that there are different breeds of cattle out there. Not all cattle are black and white like the cattle you see on the dairy commercials or Black Angus. There's a real wide range of cattle. We also have a rare breed of sheep. They're called Leicester Longwools. They're also from England. They were developed about the time period of the 18th century. And they were a real important part of the agricultural revolution, which is why most of us don't have to farm today. The agricultural revolution made farmers extremely efficient, and it's still going on. But there was a man in England named Robert Bakewell who developed sheep that were very standardized, and that had not happened before. And with standardization, then you can see improvement much quicker. You have a much steadier increase of improvement. The work that he did was written about in books that came here. Washington, Jefferson, Madison, and Monroe all read the books about Bakewell. And Washington had some of Bakewell's sheep at Mount Vernon. He was very, very interested in these sheep. So we have the sheep and the cattle. We also have two breeds of rare horses. One is called the American Cream Draft Horse. Now, this is the exception to the looking correct for the 18th century rule. And when we think about our horses, one of the things we really have to think about is, are they safe on the street? Because they are doing carriage rides. And so they have to be able to deal with baby strollers and people with dogs and garbage trucks and backhoes. And so we tend to look for personality in our horses first and the breed second. Mm-hmm. Now, the American Cream is the only American draft horse. It was developed, unfortunately, during the 1920s and 40s, which is when tractors started to become popular. So it was a very regional breed. It was developed in Iowa, and it struggled along and struggled along. And about 15 years ago, we got some American Creams, and the group reorganized, and the American Cream is actually doing very well today. It is still very rare, but the numbers are definitely going up, and I think the group's headed in a real good direction.
We've been talking about the animals. How did you get interested in this? I mean, obviously you know all this stuff, but how did you get interested?
Well, I grew up on a dairy farm, so I had a lot of practical livestock experience day to day all the time. And I had always been interested in history. We had a little museum down the street from us that my parents and I had volunteered at. And I was lucky enough to go to New Zealand on an exchange and live with sheep farmers for 8 months. So that gave me a lot of sheep knowledge.
Okay, but I still find it hard to believe that here's somebody at walking down the street and looks over and says, hey, I'll go work there and take care of the animals.
Well, as is true with, I think, a lot of people, I had a friend who said, hey, there's a job here and you are perfect for this job. So I really didn't even know the job was open. And I had a friend who was here who called me and said, you need to come apply for this job.
Well, and you got it.
And I got it.
And now you know all about the animals.
Well, I don't know about that.
Oh, well.
There's always more to learn.
Has anybody ever stumped you, ask a question that just you had no idea what it was?
Yes, and I must admit right off the top of my head, I can't tell you what those questions are. But, oh, yeah, there are people who come up with questions that I don't know the answer to.
Do you fib?
No. No, I'll tell them I don't know the answer.
You got me. I don't know that one, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. That's Colonial Williamsburg, past and present this time. Check www.history.org often. We'll post more for you to download and hear.